Right, so last week we were looking in the sixth chapter. This is the feeding of the 5,000. We were seeing that people were coming to Jesus. They were following after him, multitudes of people, because he was able to also heal people. And then they have started to sort of leave. We're going to see the rejection of Jesus in chapter 5, those at Jerusalem after he had healed a man on the Sabbath. We're going to see in the sixth chapter that those of Galilee begin to leave him as well. He's not the Messiah that they thought, that in their mind, what the Messiah would be. And so they are beginning to leave him. And then the latter part of chapter 6, we're going to see it's even his disciples are going to begin to leave him. Just in trying to understand what Jesus is asking in terms of the things and the commitment that would have to be made, we're going to see that it's even his disciples that will begin to leave Jesus. And what I'd like to do is just tie a few verses together before we get into the text this morning. But if you'll back up into verse 28, where the people are asking, what shall we do that we may work the works of God? And if you skip to verse 44, it says, no one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him, and I will raise him up on the last day. And then what we'll be looking at this morning in verse 63, it's the Spirit who gives life, and flesh profits nothing. The words that I speak to you are spirit, and they are life. And something that these Jews at that time should have picked up on is there's a prophecy in Ezekiel, and I'm not going to read all of this section, but if you wanted to on your own, it's Ezekiel 36, 22 through 32, but I would like to read verses 26 and 27. It says, and I will give you a new heart, and I will put a new spirit within you, and I will take the heart of stone out of your flesh, and I will give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you will keep my judgments and do them. And so this is what Jesus is bringing to them today. It is about spirit. It's about truth. That's what they need to be following. And the people who are coming out of the old law where they were wanting to be told, do this, do that, this is different what Jesus is teaching them. And he wants them to understand that the way you're going to get this from is from me. You have to understand the spirit. We're going to see that it's still material in their mind. That's what they're focusing on. And so if we look here in verse 35, if we tail in from what we talked about sort of last week, when Jesus said to them, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger. He who believes in me shall never thirst. But I have said to you, you have seen me, and yet you do not believe. What is this? Is this similar to someone we talked about already where you will never thirst? What was that we talked about a few weeks back? The Samaritan woman at the well, right? Would never thirst if she would believe in Jesus. And he was the one that was able to offer that to them. Now he's telling them that he is the bread of life. This is also one of the first I am statements that you'll see in the Gospel of John. We'll get to go through a few of them. The rest Bruce will take over when we get to the second half of this study. But this is one of the first I am statements. I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger. He who believes in me shall never thirst. Are these physical things that Jesus is talking about? Is he saying he's wiping out starvation? He's wiping out the ability for anyone to now no longer thirst for something physically? No, that's not what Jesus is talking about. John, were you going to say something? Exactly. Right. And again, they can't get past the material side of things. They're back to him because they want the bread, not the bread that Jesus is teaching. They want to be fed. Just like, as John mentioned, those in the times of Moses, daily, they were given that bread. They were given that by God. Jesus also points out to them that Moses didn't give that to you. God gave that to you. And so now once we make that connection between the times of Moses when he was leading them to the times now with Jesus, Jesus is making this, yes, that was an antitype to what I'm talking about. But the bread that we're talking about now, it's the physical, it's the spiritual, not the physical. And that's where they keep getting confused. They keep seeing Jesus as a physical Messiah, the king that's going to be there physically and throw off Rome. And we seem to say this each week. But that's where the people are stumbling. They can't continue to think that this is more of a physical kingdom, that Jesus is going to satiate their physical needs. Bruce? Right.
There are no more sacrifices needed once he made his sacrifice.
Yeah, that's a good connection as well. And any other thoughts or comments up to this point? So if we look back in the text, it says, all that the Father gives me will come to me, and the one who comes to me I will by no means cast out. For I have come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. This is the will of the Father who sent me, that of all he has given me, I should lose nothing, but should raise it up on the last day. And this is the will of him who sent me, that everyone who sees the Son and believes in him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up on the last day. Anything in this text, do we see that there's a sort of once saved, always saved in these sections here? I think people can be stumbled upon that. I think they can sort of misconstrue what's sort of being said there, that nothing will be lost, and all there's the will who sent, everyone who sees me believes in me may ever have life. Well, yes, but you also have to be obedient. You have to continue to be obedient. And so I don't believe that's certainly what these section of verses is talking about. But Jesus is also saying that I'm here to do the will of the Father. It's not my own will. I'm here to do the message or do the task that God has assigned him, the Father has assigned him, and that's what he's here for. And God has given him that ability to do that. And so that's what we're seeing Jesus sort of describing for us here. And so what does it say? It says the Jews then complained about him. Does anybody's version say something other than complained? Grumbled? Murmured, maybe? What does that sound like? Sounds like probably written out of time period in Exodus, Deuteronomy, something like that. It's the children of Israel grumbled. That's exactly what these people sounded like. They are grumbling because of the things that Jesus is saying. They complain to them, I'm the bread of life which came down from heaven. What's their problem with Jesus? Why are they having a problem with Jesus saying that? They know his history. They know his parents. Evidently, potentially, could have known him since he was an infant. And they're like, you didn't come down from heaven. You're Joseph and Mary's son. How could you have come down from heaven? And so again, I'm the bread of life who came down from heaven. How can that be, Jesus? We know who you are. We've known you since you were a child. And again, they're still thinking sort of materially. They don't understand that he is the Son of God and that he has come down from heaven as was prophesied. And that's the side that they just continue to miss. Thoughts or comments?
So that reference in, you mentioned in verse 39, he has given me, I should lose nothing. I think he's referring to what he prayed about in chapter 17 and verse 12. He's talking about his apostles and he... all those who was given to him, he kept, and none was lost. And it says in chapter 18 and verse 9, it was a fulfillment that none of them were lost except for the son of perdition.
Right,
so
right, right.
All but Judas was kept and
right,
saved.
Right,
and
right.
Verse 9 is what he's referring to. So you're talking about once saved, always saved. I think this is talking more about his apostles.
Sure,
he kept
sure,
them.
Sure. Right, right. I think that's a good connection as well. I also think that what Jesus is trying to point out to them is, I am not responsible for your unbelief. I am telling you that these are the things that you should be following. I am not going to lose you. You are the ones who are going to throw me off. You are the ones who are going to reject me. And I do think there's certainly a connection there to his disciples as well, particularly his closest. We're going to see at the close of this chapter where Jesus already knows that Jesus is going to, or that Judas is going to forsake him. Other thoughts or connections to make? So we pick up in verse 43 again, and it says, "And Jesus therefore answered and said to them, Do not murmur among yourselves. No one can come to me unless the Father who has sent me draws him, and I will raise him up on the last day." Why does he say, "Don't murmur among yourselves"? What happens when you're murmuring among yourselves?
You get nowhere.
Okay, you get nowhere. Right? If you got an issue, bring it to me as well, right? Don't go around my back and murmur and kind of just under your breath say these sorts of things. Let's discuss these things. If you're going to murmur like this, then don't do that amongst yourselves. So now he's going to point out to them that no one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him, and I will raise him up on the last day. How does the Father draw people? How does he draw people today? Through his word, right? We read that sort of passage in Ezekiel that it's going to be through his spirit. He's doing that today. They have Jesus in front of them, being able to sort of preach to them, teach to them. We today have his word, and if we don't spend time in his word, how are we going to know his spirit? The Father is going to draw us, but the only way he can draw us is if we spend time in his word. It's written in the prophets that they shall all be taught by God. Therefore, everyone who has heard and learned from the Father comes to me. That's what he's wanting them to see. He's wanting to see that the old law, that was the way to get to Christ. So by God drawing those people to Jesus, if they missed it, then they've missed everything. They were going to have to be taught by God. They see Jesus, they're able to see the miracles that he's able to do, but they don't believe in him. They believe that he performed the miracles. They don't understand it. They believe he's a prophet. They don't make that connection that he is their Messiah. He is the Messiah. And that's the side that they're missing. And they need to be taught by God. Instead, they're stuck in their old ways, and they're just not able to see that God is teaching them and God is drawing them. Not that anyone has seen the Father except he who is from God, he has seen the Father. So who is Jesus talking about there in verse 46? He's talking about himself, right? No one's seen the Father except the one who is from God. He's already claimed that he is from God. And he's also claimed already that he's seen the Father. We also find that other people now have said that was sort of blasphemy by him saying that. This is a little bit of a different group of people that he's talking with right now. Bruce? That's right. That's right. And he's made this sort of comment in other times as well that John has recorded for us. Because when we look at things that he is sort of talking, he is speaking as the Spirit and trying to understand that he is God. But at the same time, we see that Moses was speaking of Jesus. And they believed to be following Moses. But he's saying, if you truly believed Moses, then you would have believed in me. Because he spoke of me. So truly, you aren't a follower of Moses, and you're not a follower of God, because if you were a follower of God, then you would have known me. You would have believed in me. And I'm showing you the miracles, but yet even with that, you still don't believe that I am who I say I am. Yeah, Branson? Yes.
Teach again, which man may know the Lord, and they shall all love him. So
Right, right. I'm not sure if you're able to hear Branson, but he's tying it to Jeremiah 31. It's the same idea that that God is saying that it is going to be a time when I'm going to write that on your hearts. It's different now under this new law is what it's going to be. And the people are now not going to have to tell their neighbor, they're going to know God. And that's what those people should have been able to do, and they're not able to do that because they are missing the message that Jesus is trying to deliver to them. And it is a big change for them because in the past it has been, we always want to say the Old Testament is always about a checklist and things like that, but it was hoping to get them to this sort of new law in which it would be written in their hearts. It's not about being born a Jew. It was electing to be a Christian. That opportunity is there for us, but we have to then act on that. And when we do, it's not going to be about, well, can I do this or can I not do it? You love God because of what he's done for us. And by doing that, it changes that sort of, oh, I don't want to do this or I don't want to do or I can't do this. It's I choose to do this because I'm going to follow after what God has asked me to do because of what God has done for me. Thoughts or comments? Yeah, Jake?
When I say the word draws him, I think of a well, which brings
me
right back.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Except this time, the water is us. In that we are attracted to God, which puts us in the well, but it's Jesus that lifts us out.
Lifts us out. Good point. I had made that connection before. Thoughts or comments? We pick back up in verse 47. Most assuredly I say to you, he who believes in me has everlasting life. I am the bread of life. Again, we're trying to tie this into the days of Moses, the idea that it's in verse 49, is going to talk about the fathers who ate the manna in the wilderness. They're all dead. That was a physical way to sort of satiate the body. Jesus is not talking about that. The bread and life that Jesus is giving is something to everlasting life. It's spiritual. Yes, what Moses was able to do by God, was able to do those things. All that did was sort of point you towards what Jesus is going to do and what Jesus is able to offer, because your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness and are dead. It says, this is the bread of life which comes down from heaven, that one may eat of it and not die. How is it different that these people who eat the bread that Jesus is offering aren't going to die, but the ones that ate under Moses did? What's the difference? Bruce?
Oh, they're all going to die.
Okay. You're going to have everlasting life. Not that you're going to live a long time physically, but you will have everlasting life. You will have eternal life when you partake of that spiritual bread that Jesus is offering. Other thoughts or comments?
It's more than that.
No.
It's more than that, though, right? Because it's not just about that point of death and either dying or living. He says, not hunger or thirst. So it's a fulfillment of a fulfilled life with this bread and with this drink that it sustains us and it gives us a life that's way more abundant than anything we can have here.
Certainly have more purpose here. Certainly isn't going to say you're not going to starve physically. I mean, it's not saying those things that it's going to take care of, but it does give us that purpose in our life. It gives us that idea that it is not about where we are physically today, but it's about leading towards that sort of spiritual life that we need to sort of have that. We're not going to die from a spiritual standpoint. We're going to live everlasting. Because he tells us in verse 51 that I'm the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats this bread, he will live forever. And that bread I shall give him is my flesh, which I shall give you the life of the world. And the Jews therefore quarreled among themselves and said, how can this man give us his flesh to eat? Is that a problem for the Jews? Would that be a problem for us today? I think it'd be a problem for us today too, not just them. If it was physically talking about eating his sort of physical flesh, I think that would be a problem. I think the old law has a problem with that. I think we would have a problem with that. But that's not what Jesus is talking about. The idea that this the bread that he has, it's going to be everlasting. It's going to be so that we will partake of this bread. We will live forever. And this just caused the Jews to sort of quarrel with one another. But they're going to be, they're blinded. I think they sort of have this sort of prejudice. This is not their understanding of what the Messiah was supposed to be for them. But Paul writes for us, it says, "I have been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live in faith, and the faith in which is in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me." But he goes on to tell them, he says, "Most assuredly," I say, in other Bibles, other versions, you may say, "verily, verily, but most assuredly I say to you, unless you eat of the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise him up on the last day." How do they receive this message? This is where we're going to see some rejection coming. And who's the rejection coming from? The Jews in Galilee? No. It's his disciples. These are the people who have been with him potentially a couple of years. We're not really sure in terms of John where we are in this one, but they've been with him for a while. And now when they listen to this, are they turned off just by the fact that they're confused that this must be, he must be talking about drinking his blood and eating his flesh? Is that why they're leaving him? What is Jesus talking about where he says, we are going to have, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, what does that mean? How do we do that today? We have a symbol in the Lord's Supper, but we haven't instituted the Lord's Supper. So what is he talking about at this point? What are these disciples having to do? What does that mean in terms of following Jesus? Anything and everything we do must be about following Jesus. And before, when they had the old law and they were able to sort of take do this and do this, now Jesus is saying this is different. What I'm teaching you now is something that is going to absorb everything about you to the point of what you eat and drink. And it's about the service to Jesus. And this is the part where they're not going to be able to understand that. And they're just going to say, well, that's just too hard. I can't give that much to follow Jesus. And we're going to see that they're going to leave. Because he goes on to say, he says, "As the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so he who feeds on me will live because of me. And this is the bread which came down from heaven, not as your fathers ate the manna and are dead, but he who eats this bread will live forever." And these things he said in the synagogue as he taught in Capernaum. Because this is where they're going to question in verse 60. Many of his disciples, not some of his disciples, not few of his disciples, many of his disciples said, "This is a hard saying, who can understand it?" If you have another version, it may say, "This is a hard saying, who can listen to it?" Not so much that I don't understand it, Jesus, you're confusing me. It's just hard, and because it's hard, who can even listen to this message? So they're leaving Jesus because of it, because of this message. Thoughts or comments about why people are leaving? Do people leave Jesus today for that very same reason? It's too hard. It's not what I thought it was going to be. I'm not getting enough out of this. I'm going to have to find another religion that allows me to do the things that I want to do, but then in some way be able to worship God. I mean, I think the message that he's trying to teach them is that it is different. And if you're not able to follow that, Jesus or God is drawing you, but if you're going to reject it, I can't do anything for you. Mark? Okay. Yeah.
Because it is in the later, I'm sure we'll talk about it later, where he indicates that he's talking spiritually, not as the flesh. But even, well, how
Right, right.
And there's some, what we call blind faith. There's a lot of faith there.
Okay. I think if I'm not sure if you ever hear what Mark was saying, but it was something difficult for them. It seems as if the apostles, as they're listening to Jesus, maybe in some way it's a blind faith that they're going to believe in what Jesus is saying. I may not understand everything. We know his apostles didn't understand everything that he was saying at that particular time. He's going to, as we get to the end of this chapter, he's going to begin to tell them more that this is about the sort of spiritual side of things. And his disciples are going to go, well, no, I'm not going to go anywhere. Who else has the words of life but you, Jesus? But these people at this particular time were not, at least some of those disciples, it says many of those disciples just could not understand, would not understand, and then were not willing to listen to Jesus. And so they left Jesus. Thoughts? Yeah, Josh?
Some of the things that we would do if somebody said, man, that just doesn't make sense to me, and we would be like, oh, well, what I'm trying to say is this, and then I try to soften it so mm-hmm. they don't reject what I'm trying to say.
Right.
We concede some points. He doesn't do that at all.
Right.
Not
right.
at all. He's not ashamed of what he's saying at all.
Right.
And I think we take that from him and say, we're not ashamed of what we're saying. We want to be right with the Lord, and I can do all that I can do tell you what I believe is true, but I can't make concessions for that.
Okay, good point. Yep.
Well, if Christ had come out and explained his purpose was spiritual, his kingdom was not visible right from the very beginning, then would it have followed God's plan that the Jews would have got so upset and crucified him and that he could raise him? It's part of God's plan that he is delivering
right, right.
He said, oh, don't really worry, I'm not going to take over the kingdom here on earth. I'm just talking about a spiritual. He was just this telling everything as it is. It probably would not have happened as God had planned it.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think certainly things were done in his time, and we learn that certainly it's not his time particularly when we get into chapter 7, he's going to very much bring that up. But I think he's been fairly clear. Well, he probably has not come back and clarified again and said, oh yeah, but I do think he's been very particular about making sure that people understand that this is not about a physical kingdom, because they've tried to make him a king and he left. And so I think he is wanting people to have to come to Jesus, not just, and what we're finding is the people aren't coming to Jesus because of his message, they're coming to him because he's going to feed them. He's coming to them for all the wrong reasons, and the ones who are going to stay are going to be the ones that know that he has the bread of life, and he knows that, and eventually they find that that is a spiritual bread of life.
We're still told he all talks about the
mystery. Right.
So not everything is
sure.
Healed.
Sure.
Right,
right. That I agree with. Yep. Mark?
Jesus is doing this on purpose. He knows their hearts. He knows that some of them do not believe and are only there for the food. This is him making people make a choice.
Right. Yeah.
And to go along with what's been said already, when you look at what Jesus did in his ministry, particularly as he went to Jerusalem and leading up to his crucifixion, there were so many things that he could have done to avoid all of that. It is almost as if he orchestrated the whole thing.
Almost? Right.
He could have kept his mouth shut. He could have
exactly. Right, right, right. Yes. And I think in studying John, I think we understand in the things that John has selected for us. And again, we've talked about this from the first week, where these are witnesses. These are things that John is trying to bring to our attention that he's recording these things that we might believe. And It was very orchestrated. The miracles, the signs that Jesus performed, the ones that John chose to record, I think also were very deliberate in terms of why that sign at that time in front of that group of people. And I think it wasn't about to get rid of all the people who had an ailment in Jerusalem and heal all of the people there. That wasn't the purpose of Jesus. Yeah. Jay?
Just to jump on what Mark said, he was looking for a certain heart at that time.
Right.
We can read scriptures today 20, 30, 40 times, and our minds and hearts don't allow us to see it.
That's right.
And all of a sudden, where did that come from?
Right, right,
that's
right.
We're reading it. And so he's clearly just telling him, I'm the Passover lamb.
Right.
I'm
That's right. That's right. And from that time, many of his disciples went back and walked with him no more. And Jesus said to the 12, "Do you also want to go away?" But Simon Peter answered him and said, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. Also, we have come to believe and know that you are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered and said, "Did I not choose you, the 12, and one of you is the devil?" And Jesus spoke of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, for it was he who would betray him, being one of the 12. So it's interesting here that, and I think when we read the other Gospels and we see that the apostles finally get it. He is the Son of God. He is the Christ. He is the Son of the living God. But yet, you know, we'll turn a chapter over and they don't understand. Right? But in some ways, this is what he's trying to do. He's trying to begin to get them to believe in who he is, and it's beginning to sink in with them. Now, it is not giving them complete understanding of what Jesus is talking about. We certainly see that all the way up until the night in which Jesus is betrayed, when Peter sort of comes out to cut off the ear because he's ready to defend Jesus. So evidently he still doesn't quite understand everything that Jesus is talking about and about the kingdom. But we do understand, at least at this point, in the message that Jesus is getting out, his disciples are forsaking him. They're going away from him because they don't understand his message. They're not willing to sort of believe in him and the message that he has. But we certainly see that at least his apostles, They where else are we going to go? You have the bread of life. Yeah, Bruce.
Yeah. Stacy, here, this provides sort of a mirror for us. I mean, we look, and I think Mark made the point, we were back in those days, we lived right there with those that walked away.
Right.
But we have something they didn't have. We have the perfect law of liberty complete. And so there's no excuse for us today, but many of us look at that and say, that's too difficult.
Right.
I can't meet those standards. So they walk away. Right. And what do? They water down these things and make them say what they want them to say.
That's right.
And that's where we are today. And you just look around and we're a perfect example of what they were in the first century.
Exactly. We do. Drew, I'm not sure if you heard what Bruce is talking about, but this is exactly what we do today. We look at the message of Jesus, and we want to change it. We want to soften it, because we still want to follow after Jesus, but evidently not because we don't truly believe in him. If we believed in him, we would follow after his commands. John, are you going to say something? That's right. That's right. And if we don't do what he says, then we don't truly believe in him. And I think Jesus points that out. Jesus' own words point that out as well. So, other thoughts or comments before the next second bell? All right. So next week we'll get into chapter 7. Try to our or at least our layout or our outline for this coming week. It is the whole chapter, so it'll probably be a sort of really quick overview. There's a lot of verses there, so hopefully if you can read that chapter ahead of time, and we can have a really good discussion next week. Any closing comments this morning? I appreciate your comments thus far.
It's interesting that John doesn't allow us to forget that Judas is the one that's going to betray him.
Right.
Every time he talks about it.
Yeah. And interesting enough, we're not anywhere near that betrayal yet. Jesus already knows it. I mean, it's so interesting that's already known to Jesus. And he doesn't get rid of him at that point, right? I mean, he has to be there to do what he's going to do, but by his choice. Thank you for your comments this morning. Appreciate it.